Across the nation, graduation gaps between students of different races are closing. Here in Wisconsin, we just posted the largest black-white high school graduation rates gap in the country. The nationwide numbers are coming from the National Center for Education Statistics. We're going to take a closer look at factors surrounding this disparity on this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for listening. Kyla Calivert-Mason is Assistant News Director for Wisconsin Public Radio. She laid out the numbers in a story last month when the new data came out. Kyla, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning. Tell us, where do these graduation rate numbers come from?
Well, so these are data reported by the federal government, and they come from school districts, basically. The school districts enter them in a state system, and then the state, you know, sort of verifies them and passes them on to the federal system. So the federal government then collects everything and reports it out as, you know, in this national database that covers all of the states.
And what did the data tell all the states when this is all compiled?
Well, I mean, it gives states, you know, this is data the states already have about themselves, like I was just saying. So this gives states and, you know, people who work in education the opportunity to compare and see how, you know, they stack up to the rest of the country.
So this is data from 2015-2016 school year?
Mm-hmm.
And so why does it take so long then for it to come out?
Well, I mean, as I was just saying, it's sort of like a game of telephone, right? Like, it starts at the school district level with them entering all of their data, and then it moves on to the state, and then it moves on to the federal government. So in Wisconsin, there are more than 400 school districts. So if you sort of expand on that, think about states like California, Texas, New York, Florida, there's just a lot of data
that's coming
in
together.
So the federal government, generally, whenever they release information, it's about 2 years old.
Describe the problem of the racial graduation gap that we see in these numbers.
Well, so in Wisconsin, for the third year in a row, Wisconsin had the largest gap between graduation rates for its white students coming out of high school and for its black students. So in Wisconsin, white students have actually the third highest graduation rate for white students across the country at almost 93%. So students who enroll in high school as freshmen, 4 years later, almost 93% of them are graduating from high school. And for black students in Wisconsin, it's closer to 64%. So you're looking at what's almost, you know, a 30% percentage point gap. And that rate for black students in Wisconsin is actually the second lowest in the country.
How is Wisconsin, and you allude to there, but how does Wisconsin compare to the rest of the country then?
So nationally, in the 2015-16 school year, that gap was 12 percentage points. Black students were lagging white students nationally by just 12 percentage points. So, you know, less than half of the gap that we see in Wisconsin.
You talked to a number of education analysts. What are they telling you about what insights could be going on here? Why is this problem so extreme in Wisconsin?
Well, I think that that's the kind of question that educators and academics you know, spend entire careers trying to answer and, you know, remedy. But I think when you look at measures of all kinds of things in Wisconsin, you know, African Americans in the state lag the white population in many, many areas. You know, Shemaine Mills, our health reporter, just had a story about how Wisconsin's infant mortality rate for African American babies is three times as high as the infant mortality rate for white babies. And, you know, it's, I think, the highest rate in the country. So I mean, there are all kinds of ways in which the African-American population is not being served in the same way that the white population is in Wisconsin. And so the graduation rate gap is just one instance of this. It's not sort of an isolated thing.
We're talking with Kyla Calvert-Mason. She is Assistant News Director at Wisconsin Public Radio, and you can join this conversation about Wisconsin's graduation gap between Black and white students. If you're a teacher, what insights can you offer on this data? What are you seeing in your classrooms? What trends have you seen over your tenure as a teacher? What do you think should be done to address unlevel achievement outcomes? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Kyla, it sounds as if through your story that Wisconsin was able to revise up its numbers in what it submitted.
Yeah, I mean, I think this goes back to sort of how the data is collected, right? There's a very long chain of people, more or less, who are collecting the data and submitting it to the state or ultimately the federal government. And so the data is only as good as the people who are entering it and how well they understand, you know, how students are supposed to be labeled and counted. And so I think there were about 20 school districts that later told Wisconsin that they had errors in their data and that they had to, update the information. And in many cases, I believe that it was a revision up, but I don't think that was the case from all 20 districts. Mm-hmm. But when I spoke with the spokesperson from, you know, the Department of Public Instruction, he said, you know, the changes were not dramatic enough that it would in any way, you know, change where Wisconsin sits relative to other states.
What is the State Department of Public Instruction doing to address this?
You know, again, the spokesman said that they see themselves as sort of a repository of best practices for school districts, that the populations being served in the school districts, the gaps that they see in graduation rates or literacy levels or, you know, proficiency on standardized tests, the gaps, the Department of Public Instruction spokesperson said, are different in every district. So no one approach can address the issues present in every district. So the department sees itself as a place to sort of identify and promote best practices and for districts to turn to identify strategies that they might be able to use to address the gaps that they see in their student populations.
Are there other numbers coming out, or is this the end all data that districts really look at and analysts look at to see how states compare with graduation outcomes?
No, I think in general, there's more thinking now that there is no one number that you can look at and say, well, this is the indication of how successful we are.
Oh, because
obviously
numbers don't tell the whole story?
No. I mean, right, exactly. And so, you know, there's more, there's always standardized testing data, and the Department of Public Instruction spokesman said that in general, the department is focusing on earlier indicators, things like, you know, third grade literacy or attendance and behavior in the eighth grade. And there are all kinds of measures of how successful schools are with students. And no one number is going to tell you the whole story.
There's also ways to manipulate how you look at the data. Graduation rates, obviously, one thing to look at, but sometimes schools might try to skew things, perhaps taking drop-offs off the official record, passing students regardless
Sure.
of their grades. Is this going on?
Well, so any data that starts getting attention, so beginning at the beginning of this decade, the federal government had states start reporting their high school graduation rates in a uniform way so that we could do this kind of comparison and really be looking at apples to apples numbers. So the more attention that the high school graduation rates get, the more states and school districts focus on that particular measure. And so in 2015, NPR did a nationwide project looking at how the increase in high school graduation rates across the country was being accomplished. And because through the decade that, states have been uniformly reporting this data, the high school graduation rates have gone up. And so they basically found that there's all kinds of approaches, and some of them are excellent and they help students, like focusing on students in the ninth grade.
Leave it right there. Kyla, thank you so much for joining us. Kyla Calvert Mason is assistant news director at WPR. You can join the conversation 800-642-1234. What do you see in Wisconsin's graduation gap? Let's discuss right after this news. Nationally, the gap for white and black students has narrowed from 14 percentage points to 12. One state over, graduation gaps between black and white students in Minnesota are closing. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Before Wisconsin's white-black graduation gap became the largest in the country, that distinction belonged to Minnesota. In the 2010 to 2011 school year, Minnesota's black students graduated at a rate 35 percentage points behind their white classmates. Jenny Nagaoka is deputy director of the University of Chicago Consortium on School Research, studying school reform in Chicago. She has authored or co-authored dozens of journal articles and reports over the past two decades using data to examine school environments and educational outcomes. Jenny, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, describe the problem of the racial graduation gap that we're seeing here in Wisconsin. What do the numbers tell us?
I mean, this is a problem that occurs across the country, but, you know, it really makes, you know, it makes me think about what are the experiences of students like within schools. You know, one of the things that we've seen in Chicago, we used to have really large gaps, and we are continuing to see some gaps in the graduation rates across race, ethnicity, and gender. But we've also seen tremendous progress. Overall, our high school graduation rates have gone up a great deal. So they've gone up from about 57% 10 years ago, and now we're at 74%. But the largest gains have actually happened for our African-American and Latino students, particularly the boys.
How has Chicago's graduation gap improved so much over, you know, a pretty short span of time?
I mean, the short answer in some ways is that, you know, we haven't systematically studied that, but when we look at what's happening inside of Chicago, the way that schools look now, it's a lot different than it was 10 years ago in terms of how they're thinking about how you prevent dropout and how you get to graduation. I mean, one of the really interesting things about the changes in Chicago is how they're happening across schools, across the district, you know, in high-poverty neighborhoods, in more affluent schools. A lot of this is really grounded in this idea that dropping out of school is a problem that schools can really do something about, that it takes a systematic approach in how you're thinking about dropout, and that it's not a matter of coming in with the magic program that will solve your dropout problem. You need to be thinking across the board about the sorts of experiences that your students are having, and particularly around ninth grade. One of the distinctive aspects of the approach that Chicago has taken is that it's grounded in a focus on the freshman year, knowing that as students are transitioning from eighth grade to ninth grade, they are entering a new building. They're trying to figure out their place in there. They're trying to understand their academic identity. You know, can I succeed as a high school student? And one thing that the Chicago Public Schools have done is to pay close attention to make sure that that transition is going smoothly and that teachers are paying close attention to all students, not just the ones who sort of seem like they are likely to be at risk of dropping out, making sure that they're coming to school every day, that they're attending all their classes, that they're not falling behind and in danger of failure. Because one of the things that we found is that failure is a tremendously negative experience for students. It can really set them back. And another factor that the Chicago Public Schools have done is really grounded their approach to improving the experiences of ninth grade students using data. So they are making sure that they are tracking the attendance and grades. It's not just an impressionistic thing. They've set up data systems. They've really integrated data into how teachers and principals are thinking about this.
So what are some of the myths that are out there about how school districts can improve their performance in graduation, in remedying this graduation gap? I mean, it sounds like there's not a quick fix.
I mean, it's both not a quick fix, but it's also something that schools can start to see progress on really quickly. I mean, I think one of the biggest myths that's out there is that, you know, the reason why students drop out is because of a lot of factors that are associated with poverty. You know, families who don't have the time to be involved, that somehow adolescents just don't care about school, that girls are getting pregnant or that boys are having issues with gang involvement, and which is not to say that, you know, those factors don't exist, but one of the most important things that, you know, people trying to address dropout is realizing that there actually is a lot that schools can do to make sure that their kids are making it to graduation, that they can really change that experience. And by paying attention to students, particularly as they're entering ninth grade, that you can actually make an enormous difference in whether or not they're going to graduate. I think one of the other big myths about dropout is that, you know, above and beyond it being, you know, associated or being caused solely by poverty and not school experience, is the fact that people tend to think that it's just the low-achieving kids who drop out of high school. So one of the really striking things that we found in Chicago is that that's actually not the case. Hmm. My colleagues at the Consortium on School Research developed an indicator called Freshman on Track, which examines the performance of students during freshman year. So it means that if you're on track at the end of freshman year, it means that you have enough credits to be promoted to 10th grade, and you have no more than one semester F in a core class during your freshman year. And so this is a really simple indicator of whether or not a student is on track to graduation. What my colleagues found is that students who score in the lowest quartile of test scores in eighth grade but are on track mm-hmm. are more likely to graduate than students who are in the top quartile and are off track. So whether or not you're on track to graduate is much, much more predictive of whether or not you're going to graduate than your test scores coming into high school. And if you actually even kind of look at this more systematically, whether or not you're on track at the end of freshman year is more predictive than test scores, than whether or not you're growing up in poverty, you know, race, ethnicity, gender, all these different things that we tend to associate with dropping out.
Jenny Nagaoka is with us. She's Deputy Director of the University of Chicago Consortium on School Research, studying school reform in Chicago. We're talking about the graduation gap here in Wisconsin, the high school graduation gap between black and white students, what to do about it. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you think that it should be up to schools to deal with racial discrepancies in graduation rates, or is it a bigger problem that should be addressed on a larger societal scale? What do you think should be done to help solve this problem? 800-642-1234. Let's go to Troy, who joins us from Muskego. Hi, Troy.
Hello. I'm just going to speak for what I've seen in Milwaukee. and not so much Chicago. But here we have systemic racism, and we have a situation where we have, it just happens that minorities and blacks are pretty much confined to low-income neighborhoods. And I think that's a big factor. And I think often politicians like our governor and a lot of these people, they kind of use it as bait to use propaganda to try and get people out in the suburbs to paint a picture of a particular race, and they get poverty and race confused. The reason why I want to bring this up is the main thing I think this started from was No Child Left Behind. One thing I noticed when No Child Left Behind came out in the late 90s, early 2000s, schools got funded based on attendance, and they got reimbursed for their schools. And you notice that a lot of suburban schools got built up almost like college campuses, while schools like MPS or in Milwaukee, they didn't get as much funding because the kids were more transit and a lot of other issues that come with low-income neighborhoods.
Troy, thank you so much. Jenny, a number of things to unpack there. Go ahead.
No, I mean, I think those are some really important points. And to say that school dropout is something that high schools can do something about is not to deny the factors that go like around systemic racism, the biases in terms of school funding, how a lot of school policies tend to have a more adverse effect on urban schools than wealthier suburban schools. I think what the work in Chicago tells us, though, is that we know that dropping out of high school has a tremendously negative impact for the lifetime outcomes of our young people, and so it's something that we should be avoiding to the extent that is possible. And changing the trajectory and saying that this is something that's changing the trajectory of students and saying that this is something that schools can do something about is also a way of demonstrating that these students can succeed, that it's not, that it is not something that is a characteristic of students, that it really is that the, you know, how students are performing in school, whether or not they graduate, whether or not they go on to college, is really about the environments that we are creating for them, that adults have a responsibility to both be shaping what's happening inside of school at the same time that we are really trying to address the factors that are going on inside of these young people's communities. I mean, these are not mutually exclusive approaches, and the fact that we actually see that this is something that we can really change, and that if we are paying attention and we believe that young people can succeed, that there is the possibility that they will go on, they will graduate from high school. And in Chicago, we're also seeing more and more young people going on to college. Over the past 10 years, we're seeing 5,000 more students graduating from high school each year. And what's even more amazing is that we're actually seeing over 6,000 more students going on to college. So, it's really important to see that, if we invest in young people, we can change what happens to them. And eventually we hope that they come back to their communities and, do something to also improve it, as at the same time as we're trying to be working to make sure that there are greater investments and that there's a lot more that we are doing to support everybody inside of these communities.
Troy also mentioned that No Child Left Behind perpetuated investment disparities, especially even in infrastructure between suburban and urban schools. Is there something to that?
And I think, there's a lot of questions, I think, about their pluses and minuses to the approach of No Child Left Behind. And there are certain types of concerns that I have. But I think the idea that we're basing funding on attendance is important because part of what No Child Left Behind was trying to do was make sure that school practitioners are paying attention to whether or not students are coming to school. And, one of the foundational things that research at the consortium and researchers across the country have found is that coming to school is the foundation of whether or not students are learning, whether or not they're going to graduate from high school, because that's a tremendously detrimental thing to happen. And if kids aren't coming to school, they're not going to learn, and they're ultimately not going to graduate. So where, you know, whether or not there are also some adverse effects, I think there's also some really positive effects in making sure that schools are paying attention to attendance. You know, one thing, too, that No Child Left Behind did that was important was not just using performance in aggregate. There was attention paid to make sure that, you know, disaggregating the numbers by race, ethnicity, to make sure that, you know, we are paying attention to all students, not just the higher performing ones or the ones who seem to stand out.
So do you think that the lessons that have been learned in Chicago about how to improve these issues might apply to other cities? Can we take the Chicago models and policies and replicate them elsewhere in other cities and states?
I think it's certainly a possibility. I mean, I think one of the things that's really striking about what's happened in Chicago is that in many ways it's happening despite what's going on inside of the city and in the district. You know, we have seen a tremendous degree of instability in the leadership of schools. We've had, I've actually lost count now, but I think it's about 9 different CEOs of the Chicago Public Schools over the past 10 years. You know, we are seeing where funding of schools has gone way down. We're seeing where there's been a loss of personnel within schools and in the central office. You know, the violence that's going on in Chicago has, you know, it has been a really big problem and it's received a great deal of attention. But despite this all, the teachers and principals inside of schools are carrying on. They are showing improvement in high school graduation rates. And one thing I do want to mention is that at the same time as we're seeing rising high school graduation rates and college enrollment rates, we are also seeing improvements in ACT scores. So there really is something happening inside of Chicago high schools that I think there are lessons learned, that could be lessons learned for districts and states across the country.
Let's go to Tom, who joins us in Burlington now. Hi, Tom.
We have Foxconn coming here in southern East Wisconsin, and we really need, it's going to be 15,000 employees in this big plant. They're spending $10 billion here, so maybe you guys in Chicago ought to maybe take a look at that situation for opportunities for people. The game, the people, if we could have schools that develop games, like they these kids play with these games, we ought to sort of look in that direction too.
So technology, what can technology offer us, Jenny, to perhaps help us with these graduation gaps?
I mean, it's certainly an option. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of, I mean, I in Chicago, technology hasn't played a huge role in what's been happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a certain amount of credit recovery that's being done through online education. I mean, the evidence isn't terribly strong that that's any more effective or than having face-to-face credit recovery. But, you know, on the other hand, I think, you know, there's a lot of innovation going on out there to try to personalize learning use technology to help. To match where students where they are.
Jenny, thank you so much for joining us and telling us a Chicago story.
Thank you. I really appreciate being able to tell it because I think it's a story that people should be hearing about because there's a lot of positive things happening here.
Jenny Nagaoka is Deputy Director of the University of Chicago Consortium on School Research. We'll be back after the news. The state-by-state numbers were published last month. It's federal data, and Wisconsin led the nation for the third year in a row, having the greatest racial disparities in the high school graduation rate. We're exploring what is at work here and what can be done about it on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Laura Porterfield is Assistant Professor of Social and Cultural Foundations in the Educational Foundations Department at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. Her areas of expertise include culturally relevant teaching and cultural competence. Laura, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Well, as we explore this high school graduation gap between white and black students, what do you see as going on in Wisconsin? Why is this problem so severe?
Well, I think there are a number of widespread social and economic issues that we need to explore. Part of the issue is that we kind of rely on schools almost myopically to redress a host of historical and social and cultural problems. These are kind of old issues, but, you know, they bear repeating. The form and structure of public schools in the United States, in Wisconsin as well, down to the curriculum, how we assess students' learning, reinforces ideals of whiteness and white supremacy. And in Wisconsin, we have a sort of tale of two states, one that has historically provided opportunities for a living wage for its white European immigrants, and one where the black folks who migrated from the South, from states like Mississippi and Tennessee and Arkansas after World War II, met widespread racial discrimination and manufacturing decline. So the social and economic safety nets that provide a sort of climate possible for doing well in all aspects of life, including schools, is not equally available to these communities. So when we're talking about this white-black gap, we have to think about it in terms of the ways that schools are nested in larger communities, which have larger social and historical issues to bear on the problem. So I think connected with this broader historical issue, when we think about white-black achievement and graduation gaps, is that there's a strong link between poverty and traditional academic success, and it's not the sole responsibility of black students to sort of remediate these longstanding social and economic disparities. As Jenny sort of mentioned previously, students are excelling despite these many factors. In Wisconsin, we saw gains in graduation for black and Latino students in the state, but when we look at them more generally in comparison to their white peers, we see that those gains aren't equitable.
So when you say that schools are nested in communities, and when you look at a city like Milwaukee, you see many, many communities within Milwaukee, and also trying to figure out there must be certainly different challenges within each different community. Can you make sweeping generalizations with the numbers like this to get at the heart of a problem?
No, you can't. And I think you just hit the nail on the head. I think many times we want, and because we care about sort of the stakes for black children who are showing up and going to schools every single day, because we care about that, we want to figure out how to solve the problem very quickly. We want to address these issues. We want to implement certain strategies or practices or best practices from across the nation, say from Chicago, for example. But the contextual factors outside of school need to be taken fully into account so that we can incorporate economically and geographically viable solutions that make sense where students are. So I don't think we can make these sweeping grand generalizations. We need to understand them inside of communities. We need to capitalize on the community leaders who are doing the work to help them and provide them with levers to be able to magnify and amplify the work that they're already doing in those communities, because oftentimes they're the best experts to really understand why this issue is so big, why it's important in terms of educational attainment, but also life attainment and well-being.
But it starts with a first step. What can communities do as a first step if they're not, you know, really taking action against this, on this issue of the disparity between black and white students and the high school graduation rate? What is the first step?
I think there's a couple of things, right? I think we need to continue to invest and expand prioritize investments in teacher preparation programs that provide future teachers with the tools they need to work with black and other communities of color.
These include Grow Your Own programs, things like minority teacher preparation programs that incentivize students of color to become teachers, and also programs like the University of Wisconsin System Institute for Urban Education. These are things that everyday folks can put pressure on their political representatives to invest in, to expand, to prioritize. I think we also need to commit to coordinated efforts that are sort of fully understood and supported by the public across economic, employment, housing, and educational sectors to address issues befalling Black communities in the state. I mentioned that previously that I think we have a moral responsibility to ensure that we amplify the work being done in these communities across the state. It's not just a Milwaukee problem. It's not just a Racine problem. It's not just a Madison problem. This is an issue that we all as a public need to sort of put pressure on on the folks in power to invest and prioritize. Schools are cultural institutions, and they reflect the values of the communities in which they're placed. So I think we all need to come together and say, we value Black children, and, you know, we'll put pressure on those who have the power to do something about it, to do something about it.
Well, you say schools are cultural institutions, but oftentimes educational policy is certainly not that rich. It doesn't get at the richness and the multi-layered multi-layeredness of what is happening in these cultural institutions. So how can educational policy adapt and to reflect something that can help these communities bring up their achievement gaps?
Well, I think firstly we need to take a look at the curriculum. One of the pieces of language I want to offer here is we're talking about dropouts, is that many critical race theorists, myself among them, you know, offer the language of pushed out. How are these institutions sort of fermenting and exacerbating a gap between out of school and in school lives, skills, opportunities? How do schools sort of exacerbate those larger issues within the school walls? And I think part of the issue to understand is the oftentimes lack of teacher preparedness to really embrace the funds of knowledge of the Black communities that sort of teachers are teaching and educating and working with. I think teacher preparation programs are culpable to some extent to adequately and comprehensively preparing teachers who view Black children as worthy and as capable. And so part of the call to educational policymakers is to continue to invest and to expand investments in culturally relevant teaching and in critical race theory preparation for the mostly white teaching force, which is true across the nation, but particularly in Wisconsin. We need to prepare teachers better to view Black children as capable. And because we've seen some of the large mediated representations of Black folks as not being capable, and I think one of the listeners previously spoke to this this sort of rhetoric of Milwaukee as I'm talking about Milwaukee in particular here, mm-hmm. as crime ridden and violence prone, the teachers who come from suburban and rural areas may bring with them those pejorative, deficit based approaches to teaching their children. And if we are not prepared to systematically help them unlearn those views, they may walk into the classroom and replicate them unknowingly, unconsciously,
as
because of their implicit bias.
And, you know, and taking a look at here as we start to wrap up, you teach future students and you have to put into them, instill them these qualities that these are worthy and capable students. How do you do that?
I think the number one way
future
to do
teachers,
that is,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think the number one way to do that is to put them in communities, to provide them with well-rounded, comprehensive field experiences that simply humanize a population that has been demonized for decades. And they have experiences that are not earth-shattering, but they say, you know, many of my students, my future teachers, say, I had a wonderful experience. You know, Jenny mentioned that some of the misconceptions are that urban parents don't care. Well, after their field experiences, many of them say they care. They show up, you know. They may show up in different ways, but they care. And so I think providing students with more and earlier opportunities to engage with communities that they have very little experience with is sort of essential.
Have you seen some aha moments by doing that?
Certainly, I think more than anything, addressing white pre-service teachers in particular, but it stands to reason for other pre-service teachers, addressing, allowing them to see their own perceptions and the sort of rootedness of their beliefs about what it means to be a good student, allowing them to sort of reflect on what that means and where that comes from. That's sort of connected to the point I made about schools are sort of cultural institutions and they reflect cultural values, but they almost narrowly reflect very specific types of cultural values based on our initial construction of public schools, which was in the image of white Anglo-Saxon Protestant males.
Well, Laura, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Laura Porterfield is Assistant Professor of Social and Cultural Foundations in the Educational Foundations Department at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. We have been talking about the high school graduation gap between white and black students in Wisconsin and why it is the largest disparity nationwide. Earlier, we talked with Jenny Nagaoka, Deputy Director of the University of Chicago Consortium on School Research. We started the hour with WPR's Assistant News Director, Kyla Calvert-Mason.